Wednesday, September 18th. More air raid alarms were sounded in London this morning on the heels of the 10-hour all-night attack, which was the longest of the war. Berlin talks of successful attacks on the British capital, and the Nazis have informed newsmen that Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop has suddenly departed from Rome, and they are trying to give the impression that it is a highly significant diplomatic move. This morning, Columbia calls in its correspondents in the German and British capitals for the latest news. Edwin Hartridge is to report from Berlin, and our CBS correspondent from London. Afterwards, Linton Wells will report for more news from our New York studios. While we are waiting for the news from Berlin by Mr. Hartridge, here is the latest news from Rome as received in the Columbia Broadcasting newsroom in New York. Today's Italian communique reports that British Royal Air Force planes have sunk an Italian destroyer and a barge in the port of Bengasi, Libya. The fascist communique says that the British planes attacked the lines of Italian forces which were moving eastward along the Egyptian coast. It was claimed that the Italians were making a victorious advance through Egypt despite all obstacles, and that they are proceeding with the organization of new bases and new supply lines. British bombing planes and advanced tank and artillery units have inflicted serious losses on two Italian columns advancing into Egypt along the Mediterranean coastal belt, a communique of the British Middle East Command said today.
This is Berlin. Armed reconnaissance planes and German bombers resumed their attack this morning. Then the day in day gives us the report of a reconnaissance plane. As the pilot described, the damage done to London in yesterday's raid. According to this account, whole blocks of London seem to have disappeared. At one spot, there was a giant crater, which led the pilot to believe that a German bomb had scored a direct hit on a London subway. New fires were observed, says this report, and many fireboats were seen in action on the Thames River. Also, there was much shipping activity, and this report interprets that as an attempt by the British to transport important stocks of goods away from the bombed dock areas of London. Last night, we are told, one of Dornier's and Heinkel's attacked London again, bombing, quote, objectives of military significance in the city, end of quote. Also mentioned as other objectives were Victoria, West India, and London docks, where fires were started. Other fires were started in London at Bow Station and Thurston Road, as the day in day. This news concludes with a claim that during the attacks on the airfields at Gravesend and Tunbridge, many planes were destroyed on the ground. As for the British planes, we are told that several of them tried to enter Germany last night. The Bay and Bay adds that one was shot down while the others were driven off by anti-aircraft fire. There's a one-line announcement in the papers that Herr von Ribbentrop, the Foreign Affairs Minister, has left for Rome, where he will stay for a short time. No other details are given. At the Foreign Office, a spokesman refused to give any additional information regarding his own visit. He said, in view of the close relations of Italy and Germany, an occasional interchange of views was to be expected. As you know, yesterday Herr Hitler had conferences with Serrano Sunye, the Spanish Minister of the Interior, and General Ferrucci, the Italian Colonial Minister. To us observers here, all these diplomatic developments have a distinct Mediterranean slant. And we are wondering whether a campaign against the British is being planned. There is Gibraltar at one end of the Mediterranean, which the Spanish are interested in taking over, and there's a Suez Canal at the other end, which the Italians in the desert campaign in Egypt are aiming at. Italy is in the middle of Mare Nostrum, and the British hold the keys to this vast liquid prison. And if a war against the British Isles is not over in a few months, observers here are inclined to think that a concerted attempt by the Axis powers in the Mediterranean against the British might be on the books for the winter months. So Herr von Ribbentrop's sudden trip to Rome throws a speculation more into the limelight. And tied up with this is the news that the Minister of Interior, Herr Frick, has issued a second call to all officials capable and willing to enter colonial work to report for duty. The second call was handed out a few days ago. The newspapers are publishing the first picture received from London, via America, of bombing results in London. I don't know what the original caption or description of the bombed building stated. The German caption identifies the ruined structure as a warehouse somewhere in London. We have some mention of reported attacks of German bombers on London's West End with the exclusive Mayfair district and the shopping center. The Bayzid Mittag reports, and I quote, the Reuters news agency has admitted that warehouses in this West End district have been hit, as well as a large water main, end of quote. The flooding of the streets and the nearby air raid shelters forced the, quote, plutocrats, unquote, to the surface, as they had said.
Then Miss Walter Blatt pushed an end person saying that 2,000 buildings of all descriptions in London had been totally destroyed, while another 3,000 seriously damaged, another 10,000 slightly damaged, with an indication of the results of the German bombing attack. But in another column, this paper warns its readers about, quote, the American press is supporting the British campaign of lies as well as it can, and they personally destroyed hospitals, churches, museums, and other similar buildings, and improved. This is Edwin Harker to returning an Albert Fondor in New York.
Back in New York, here is the latest news from Washington. President Roosevelt and other government leaders returned to Washington today from Speaker Bankhead's funeral. All Washington talk continues to center around conscription. And now the news from the British capital, as reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. We've already had four or five alarms this morning after a 10-hour raid last night, which was not over until 6 a.m. It was the longest raid London has ever gone through, and certainly for this part of London, the West region, it was the most severe. The communique today says that casualties, though not all counted yet, are heavier than other nights. I know more about the attack on the west part of town, which is bad enough, but the official report says it was even worse in eastern and southeastern London. They tell us that five German bombers at least were destroyed during this raid. The planes came over in relays in quick succession, and it was impossible for anyone in this part of town to get very much sleep. There seemed to be no interruption whatsoever in the gun barrage and the whining and the crashing of the bombs. I was trying to sleep in my basement. At least a dozen times, I sat up and braced myself, feeling sure that Zeppelin was certainly going to hit the place. This morning, it seemed to me, I didn't turn a street corner while driving around this part of London without coming across a police barrage near a time bomb or finding a building which was intact yesterday now crumpled into the street. To go a mile and a half to a railroad station today, I had to detour, I think, seven times. Just on that particular route alone, I saw at least 30 wrecked houses. Along that route, there's not a single real military objective that I can think of. The bombs hit food shops and dairies, branch bank buildings, hotels, small and large department stores, and one block of flats after another. The nearest place that can be called a military objective around my apartment is some five blocks away. But I can't walk one block in any direction from my place without finding shops and homes strewn into the streets. But what Goering has in mind when he gives orders for this kind of bombing, I can't quite imagine. Most people here assume it's simply designed to terrorize. The curious thing is that terrorization is the one thing that doesn't happen. Communications in residential areas are slowed down, and non-essential industries are hit, and people lose their sleep and their families. But it would take a great deal of that kind of attack to win a war. If the RAF were to strew 1,000 bombs tonight in the residential areas of Berlin, you may be assured that everyone in London would feel happier for it. Well, thousands of office and store workers around this part of London can't get into their places of work this morning. And that includes the staff of our own office. It may be days before we can see just how much damage we've suffered there. There were some big fires near us all night, and one of the biggest department stores in London, the John Lewis Company, is gutted today. We could see searchlights operating from central London last night for the first time in a week. I don't mean to suggest that London, or even any part of London, is now in ruins. The smashed buildings around here constitute only a tiny fraction of the total. This is a closely built city, and the skyline is quite unchanged. The only thing that could really lay waste any considerable part of the city would be fire, fanned by these autumn winds. The Air Ministry has announced this morning that big attacks were carried out last night by RAF bombers on German shipping concentrations and barges and communications in the enemy-occupied territory and in Germany. And this morning, the London press describes the Italian advance into Egypt as a costly one. British people are informed that the occupation of Sidi Barani, 60 miles inside Egypt, is not important from the point of view of the defense strategy. The real defense is expected to come when the Delta and the Nile Valley are threatened. Yesterday, German pilots that raided this country used the new Heinkel 113 for the first time in real numbers. They used a different tactic during yesterday afternoon, sending over small waves of plane in quicker succession than usual. There was no major engagement of fighting planes, and what battling there was took place in a 100-mile-an-hour gale. And during the night, not much damage was done by bombs outside of London, according to the Air Ministry. Glasgow was hit, and some factories there did suffer. As a result of these constant bombs in London, the schools are rapidly emptying. The rate of evacuation of school children from the city has now climbed to 1,500, to about between 1,500 and 2,000 a day. The official figure for children still here stands at 200,000. This is CBS in London. I return you now to Columbia, New York.
And now here in New York is Linton Wells with his analysis of the news. Mr. Wells.
As our Berlin and London correspondents, Edwin Hartridge and Eric Severide, had pretty thoroughly covered current Nazi attacks against England and vice versa, little remains to be said about that situation, except that, according to Eric Severide, the British seem to be bearing up well under the strain, and therefore Hitler's chances of beating them into submission before winter appear to be growing slimmer. Incidentally, a so-called world's largest department store reportedly destroyed in London was probably Selfridge's, which is in Oxford Street. There's considerable speculation in diplomatic circles about Nazi Foreign Minister Ribbentrop's sudden departure for Rome, where he arrives tomorrow morning. The consensus seems to be, according to Edwin Hartridge, that Spain will be the principal topic of Ribbentrop's forthcoming talks with Mussolini. Ramon Serrano Suñer, the pro-Axis Spanish Minister of the Interior, who also is dictator Franco's brother-in-law, has been visiting Berlin officially and yesterday talked with Hitler and Ribbentrop, after which Ribbentrop hurriedly left for Rome, as Mr. Hartridge told us. Suñer is expected to follow him there in a day or so. All this is accepted as conclusive proof of Spain's alignment with the Axis powers and indicative of an impending active participation in the war. There's been increasing agitation in the Spanish press urging Spain to throw in her lot with Germany and Italy and drive the British out of Gibraltar, and such a new move may be on the agenda. A Spanish drive against Gibraltar would unquestionably prove most embarrassing to the British. The great rock is considered impregnable to attack from the sea and air, but military experts believe it is far less defensible from overland attacks such as those a strong Spanish force could make. If the British were to lose Gibraltar, and few reinforcements of the rock are available now, their fleet in the eastern Mediterranean and their forces in Egypt and Palestine would be placed at a considerable disadvantage. The Italian drive against the British in Egypt continues on three fronts, but only reports of battles in the desert wastes of northwestern Egypt are available. Despite strong British aerial and land attacks, the Italians, it is admitted officially, according to Eric Severide, have occupied the important oasis of Sidi Barani, which is 75 miles inside Egypt from the Libyan frontier and at the end of a concrete highway leading to Marsa Matru and Alexandria. The Italians undeniably have made headway in their push toward the Suez Canal, but if the expected happens, that is, Egypt's formal entry into the war, the going will be far less easier from now on. So far, Egypt has not declared war against Italy, although the government has said repeatedly that an Italian invasion would force Egypt to join Britain actively. Both the British and Italians are exerting great pressure upon the Egyptians, and a showdown appears imminent. In every conceivable manner, the Italians are endeavoring to convince the Egyptians that the sole fascist aim is to save them from the British and to foment an Egyptian revolt against the English. The British, of course, are moving heaven and earth to obtain active and invaluable Egyptian support. At the moment, the odds appear to be slightly in favor of the British, but a friend of mine just returned from Egypt tells me that Mussolini is pouring large quantities of gold into Egypt, where he thinks it will do the most good, and that the Italians thus may be able to persuade the powers that be to remain inactive. As two can play at such a game, and as the British have more gold to pass out than the Italians and Germans combined, England may yet get material and effective Egyptian support.
And with these reports from Berlin by Edwin Hartridge, and from London by Eric Severide, and the report from New York by Linton Wells, Columbia brings to a close another broadcast of important world developments. George Bryan speaking.